Chapter 3. An Entire City of Godrics. The first thing Talia noticed when she stepped off the ship onto the stone pier was the size of the crowd. Not their numbers, the actual physical size of the people in the crowd.
"Oh, lovely," she said to Sebe. "It's an entire city of Godrics."
Talia guessed there wasn't a single adult in the crowd, less than 6 feet in height, and most were well above that. A few even looked taller than Arta. She just rubbed her still miserable stomach and glared at the crowds.
"I can live with that," Sabe said, a faint grin on her face.
Talia rolled her eyes at the other girl. Godrick himself strode down the gangplank, carrying both his luggage and Talia's. Not that Talia couldn't carry it herself, but Godrick seemed to suffer mental anguish when he wasn't helping someone with a task. It was a struggle to carry anything of your own when Godrick was around.
"I need to find a new hammer while we're here," Godrick said. "Keep your eyes open for any smiths or enchanters."
"I wonder how long this one will last,"
Arta replied, gently pushing Hugh ahead of him.
"Anyone want to place bets on when he'll lose or destroy it?"
Talia noticed that Hugh actually seemed to be paying attention to the city around him, rather than just being withdrawn into himself. Maybe he was starting to move past Ava, dumping him. She quickly looked away, not wanting to stare. She was only concerned because she didn't like seeing her friend sad, after all.
"We've got a couple of days until our chartered ship is scheduled to leave," Alustin said. "Let's get all our things to our inn. Then you can take some time to explore Lothal."
Sabi had bent down to feel the top of one of the basalt columns that formed the city.
"This rock's almost black. Shouldn't it be hot from the sunlight?"
"Lothal's primary enchantments drain the heat from the stone and store it deep underground," Alustin said. "There's a massive cavern there where they used that heat to boil seawater and separate out the salt. They pump the water up into the city using that same heat, and then use the salt as one of the city's main exports and sources of government revenue."
The group's usual method of manoeuvring through a crowd involved simply having Godrick lead the way and following in his wake. But now they found themselves moving at a crawl. While Godrick and his father were still tall, even by the absurd standards of Lothal, they were hardly giants here, like they were most places. Talia kept getting jostled by ridiculously oversized men and women, all loudly arguing, yelling out greetings across the bustling crowd, and gesturing wildly. And on top of that, they were all speaking in nigh incomprehensible accents, even thicker than Arta's. At one point, Talia found herself separated completely from the others. She felt a slight hint of panic at that. She wasn't normally claustrophobic, but she felt like she was about to get trampled at any second. On top of that, she kept tripping on the narrow gaps between the tops of the interlocking stone columns. She got Alustin's joke now, at least. If she dropped a coin, it'd definitely roll straight down one of those gaps. She didn't really have any spells that could help, outside of causing mass destruction and carnage. She wildly pushed around through the crowd for a moment, not seeing the others, until something flitted in front of her eyes. It was a little paper crane. Talia sighed in relief and followed Alustin's origami golem out of the crowd, where she found the others all waiting for her on a slightly quieter terrace away from the crowd at the upper harbour. And, of course, she tripped on one of the cracks between the tops of the columns and went sprawling forwards. Before she hit the ground, she felt her fall slow, then reverse, and she came back up to her feet again.
"Thanks, Hugh," she said, blushing a little.
"That's what I'm here for,"
Hugh said absently, turning away.
"We really do fall down a lot, don't we?" Sabe said.
"I think that's kinda our specialty,"
Godrick replied,
but you'll get used to watching your steps here before long. In some of the neighborhoods towards the edges of the city, there are no cracks in between the columns, which helps. Construction of the city over the years loosened a lot of them.
Talia ignored their conversation and fumed to herself. She hated this city already. Sabe gratefully dropped her luggage on her bed in the inn room she was sharing with Talia. The inn was most of the way down the city, almost to the lower harbour. Her legs were burning a bit just from walking down all those countless staircases. She couldn't imagine how much of a hassle it would be carrying a heavy load all the way from the lower to the upper harbour. There weren't any wagons either. Cargo hauling was all done by porters or mages.
"I'm going to wander down to the lower harbour," she told Talia. "Want to come with?"
"Nope,"
Talia said from where she was sprawled on her own bed.
"That was mostly rhetorical," Sabe said. "You've never seen a proper sea before, right?"
"We're about to be on it for weeks," Talia said. "I'm sure my stomach will hate it just as much."
"Come on,"
Sabe said, grabbing Talia by the hand and hauling her out of bed.
"Quit being all grumpy. Your stomach should be feeling better in no time. I'm getting enough sulky from Hugh."
"He's not being sulky, he's just..."
Talia said.
"He's being sulky," Sabe said. "Nothing wrong with that. He just had his first breakup. It's normal, but it's still a little exhausting. I bet you were like that after your first breakup too."
Talia gave her a level look.
"Well, maybe not sulky so much as dramatic," Sabe said. "And angry."
Talia kept staring at her.
"Anyhow, just saying. Hugh's being dramatic, yes. Not ridiculous,"
Sabe said.
"We should drag him out with us too,"
Talia said.
"I'd planned on it,"
Sabe responded.
"Keeping him busy will help."
Hugh at least came willingly, without being dragged. At least in part because he knew Sabe really would drag him. He'd already had a couple weeks to sit around and mope. And it had probably been good for him. Better than dwelling on the battle atop Skyhold, at least. Alustin and Arta were waiting for them in the half-full common room of the inn as they descended the stairs, which, of course, were made of columnar basalt. An absurd amount of magic must have gone into the construction of Lothal. There's no way that simply carved buildings straight out of the basalt without many of the columns just falling apart. She frowned at Alustin, but quickly wiped it off her face. Things had been strained between the two of them since their confrontation in his office. Sabe still hadn't decided whether to tell the others that the events of the last year, including Bakori's breakout and the awakening of Jaskolskus, had been engineered as a coup by Kandaron, with Alustin's help. Sabe had long accustomed herself to the idea that she and her friends would be pawns in the games of the great powers, like Kandaron or her own grandmother. Or at least, she thought she had. But something rubbed her the entirely wrong way about the callous manner in which she and her friends had been used as bait for the demon Bakori. There had been safeguards, sure, but those had proven woefully insufficient.
"We've got a lost city to talk about," Alustin said cheerfully, waving them over to the table.
"Should you really be talking about that in the open?"
Sabe asked. Alustin shrugged and turned to a nearby patron at another table.
"Hey, do you know where the lost city of Imperial Ithos is located?"
The man just stared at him, confused. Then his face went blank and he looked away.
"The Exile Splinter's power hasn't faded entirely yet," Alustin said. "It took a year and a half of me testing you and exposing you to knowledge of it before its hold on you was broken."
Arta grimaced. He'd only found out about Imperial Ithos and the Exile Splinter a week ago. Kandaron, the primary creator of the mysterious Exile Splinter, had the ability to shield others from the effects of the weapon that had cast the capital of the Ithonian Empire out from the world of Anastis. Directly shielding Arta from the effects of it had left him with a debilitating headache for several days, however. Kandron wasn't the only great power with knowledge of the Exile Splinter, however, or the impending return of Ithos to the universe. Other great powers and nations had that knowledge, as well as the ability to shield people from some of the Exile Splinter's effects. Most worryingly, the Havath Dominion, the expansionist power from the east of the Ithonian continent that considered itself the rightful inheritor of the Ithonian Empire's mantle. Sabe and the others sat around the table with the two older mages.
So, we have five major potential sites for Ithos we'll be investigating on this trip, Alustin said. They're all along the southern coast of Ithos, so we'll be sailing east to check all of them out. There are some other minor sites we'll likely be inspecting, if we have time as well.
How will we know if it's the right place? Sabe asked.
First, Alustin said, it's going to be big enough for a large city to fit. Second, it will be an ether desert that is starting to have rapid and unpredictable increases in its ether density. Third, there should be signs of a lateral manor well. Unlike many other great cities throughout history, Imperial Ithos was built on a lateral manor well with a rather stunted labyrinth, not a junction well with a full labyrinth. There shouldn't be a labyrinth there when we find it. The entrance to Ithos's labyrinth was dragged out of our world along with the city itself. There are a few other clues as well, largely based on the distance to historical population centres and the like. Imperial Ithos was somewhat remote and inaccessible for a capital, so far as we can tell. It was only built a couple centuries before the fall of the Empire, and it was built that way deliberately so as to be more defensible.
Alustin paused.
Also, if you see an ancient city pop into existence, you're probably in the right place.
It's definitely either going to be at the last location we check, or at none of them, and then turn out to be a location we never even thought of, Talia said. Or it's in Emblin.
Sabe sighed.
Is that another of your theories, derived from all the trashy adventure novels you read? And why would it be in Emblin?
Alustin butted in before the two of them could start squabbling again.
It's definitely not Emblin. It's been a manor desert since well before Ithonian times. We'd best hope that it's one of the locations we're searching, or at least one of the locations being searched by other librarian errant teams. We're not the only ones looking.
You mentioned Imperial Havath was looking as well?
Godric asked. Alustin nodded.
And at least a half dozen other great powers we know of. There's a good chance we're going to be attacked on this trip.
How good of a chance? Talia asked.
Alustin and Arta glanced at one another meaningfully.
I'd be shocked if we don't get attacked, honestly, Alustin finally said.
Arta grimaced again. Sabe glanced up, spotting movement above.
Hugh's crystal spellbook was lurking among the uneven, basalt columns making up the ceiling. Even though it didn't have eyes, a face, or any visible way of expressing itself, she was fairly confident it was giving Talia a nervous look. The fact that she'd threatened to destroy it quite messily had probably contributed to that.
Sabe sighed and turned her attention back to the conversation.
Godric frowned at the selection in the weapon broker's shop.
What do you think of this one?
He asked the others, showing them a particularly hefty morning star.
It's not a hammer, Hugh said, glancing at it. Godric's fighting style should still work well enough with it, though,
Talia said absently, eyeing a particularly nasty-looking halberd. Then she paused and looked apologetically back at Hugh.
But the hammer is kind of iconic for him and his father, though.
Godric sighed and set the Morningstar back on the rack. He wasn't even sure if Talia realized how ridiculous she'd been acting over Hugh since Ava dumped him, or even if she was aware of her painfully obvious crush on him. Hugh definitely hadn't noticed it, that was for sure. He glanced over at Sabe, who was flirting with the shop clerk. Badly flirting. Now that she'd finally convinced herself it was fine to date, she'd been diving in headfirst at every opportunity. It hadn't gone beyond awkward flirting just yet, but it was just a matter of time before someone was crying on Godric's shoulder over all of this. Or the other way around. Godric was under no illusions that he was less of an idiot than his friends at times. Judging from the frequent looks the clerk was giving Godric, either he would prefer Godric to be the one flirting with him, or he'd recognized him as Arta's son. Godric's da was nothing if not well known in Lothal, even considering how seldom he visited the city. Godric had to be honest. He got a little tired of just being recognized as the son of Arta Wallbreaker, and not being recognized simply for being himself. He glanced at the Morning Star again. Maybe he should get it, just to differentiate himself from his da. He did know how to use one, albeit not as well as he did a hammer. "What are all these pamphlets?" Hugh asked, idly browsing the pile of them on a nearby table.
"They're for Ampioc's various cults," Godric said.
"Cults? Plural?" Hugh said.
"Weren't you paying any attention to Kendron when she was telling you all this? Or to me the half dozen times I've told you this?" Godric asked.
Hugh gave him a sheepish look. Godric rolled his eyes at that.
"Ampioc has relatively little interest in the day-to-day running of his cult," Godric said. "He's controlled Lothal for about 30 years now, and in that time, his cults have fractured again and again. There's actually specific theological reasoning for it, and the biggest debate is to whether there should be 8 or 9 different Ampioc cults."
"How many are there now?" Hugh asked.
19? Maybe 20? Godric said.
His parents had moved to Skyhold from Lothal when Godric was still a small child, and he didn't remember it very well. They'd only returned to visit his mother's parents a couple of times, and they'd both passed on years ago. Godric certainly didn't feel any strong connection to the city, and his father had mostly bad memories of it. He still kept up on the news from Lothal, though.
"How about this one?" Talia asked,
trying and failing to lift a sledgehammer sitting in a tucked-away corner. Godric reached over and pulled out the hammer. The enormous pentagonal steel head of the hammer was shaped like a basalt column, so it had clearly been made here in Lothal. Lothalans were obsessed with making sure things fit the city's pentagonal aesthetic. It was unusually heavy, even for its large size, but still well-balanced. Godric reached out with his affinity senses to find that a long steel rod extended down the inside of the ashwood handle.
"I think a plant or tree mage grew this handle up around the tang of the hammerhead," Godric said, turning it over in his hands. "No enchantments, but I reckon this can take a serious beating."
"I bet it can dish one out too," Talia said.
Godric spent a few more minutes looking over weapons, but he eventually came back to that same hammer. The head that mimicked one of Lothal's countless columns was a bit silly to Godric's mind. It's not like Lothal needed any more of them, but it was a sturdy, well-built hammer. He'd prefer something enchanted, but there's no way he could afford an enchanted weapon right now. His dire services as a battle mage were in high demand, but Arta wouldn't casually purchase Godric one regardless. Decent weapons-grade enchantments were absurdly expensive, and Godric had lost his last couple of hammers. Well, magically detonated his last one, but still. A long round of bargaining with the clerk later, which, of course, was as loud, ridiculous and argumentative as any bargaining session in Lothal, Godric left the shop with his new hammer slung over his shoulder.
"Why are Lothalan coins blank on one side?"
Sabé asked, looking at a Lothalan blank. The coin's non-blank side had a pattern clearly meant to depict the city's columns. Godric shrugged.
"I heard it's 'cause Lothal used to trade the ruler so often that the city mint got sick of cutting new molds. I'm not sure that's true, though."
"While we're shopping, I want to try and get some more shards of whalebone. I heard that some of Lothal's water mages harvest it from whale falls on the seabed, or trade for it from sea dwellers. Anyone want to find a bakery after that?" Talia asked. "Besides you, obviously."
"I actually don't know if I'm hungry right now," Hugh said. Godric, Talia and Sabé all stopped as one to stare at Hugh. They'd literally never seen him pass up a chance to go to a bakery. That pause saved Godric's life. He heard a loud clack. Then the world went white.